Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan All-Stars, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist show in the country. Now, here's your All-Star host.
Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show. Everybody, Silker Ghost Show co-host Joe, your All-Star host for today. And as the late, great Alan Nathan would say, here's his mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. The Alan Nathan Show comes to you these days from the Main Street Radio Network, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for that. And you can show them some support. Go to mainstreetradionetwork.com and find out more about the Alan Nathan Show up there. Find podcasts for the show. Find out about the Silker Joe Show, too. Why not? I'm hosting today, so I'm saying you should go and check out the Silker Joe Show on mainstreetradionetwork.com. Podcasts for that are available up there, too. In fact, just stop listening to this show right now and go listen to my show, and then come back and listen to this show once the podcasts for this show are available. There, see, I just saved you time by giving you an extra hour of listening to do. Anyway. We are also on social media, Main Street Radio Network on Facebook, Main Street Radio on X, Alan Nathan also on X. And Alan also had his own website during his lifetime. It's still up, alannathan.com. And you can find columns and articles, op-eds, etc., that he's written over the course of his life. I'm not going to vouch for 100% all of them being up there because I'm not familiar with his early work. I might not have been born during his early work. So, you know, if you want to blame anyone, blame my parents for that oversight. But it's all on alannathan.com nonetheless, at least what we have records of. And you can also, we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network as well for distributing this show. Now, at this point, Alan would have read to you the pre-written topics. So in that continued tradition, these topics that are on the social media outlets, I got mine right here. Democrats said Tennessee's District 7's special election would be a bellwether for the midterms if they won, and will still claim victory in defeat. Why? Also, Democrats create a hoax around War Secretary Hegseth to justify calls for a military coup against the Trump administration in the name of democracy, of course. Probably get to that one later because I got this Democrat, this Tennessee District 7 thing fresh on my mind. I got all these numbers right here to bore you to death with, too, in the opening segment of the show. But the gist of it has been, in the lead up to the election, Democrats said, we're going to take it. We're going to win. We have all this momentum on our side. Look at that. We did in the elections this year in all these blue states. We're going to flip a red district blue as well. But then they didn't. And then you even had polling saying, oh, they're within 5%. They weren't. They were within 9%. And that's a interesting figure, too. I guess they were taking into account the fact that half the Republicans stayed home compared to last year. So here are the figures from 2024. 191,992 voted for Mark Green. He was the Republican candidate in Tennessee District 7 last year. And then he up and quit 6 months later, or 5 months after taking office again for his fourth term. Just five months into his fourth term, yeah, I'm done. Bye, everybody. Leave you representativeless and create this vacuum that Democrats hope that they could sweep into. But then the Democrat candidate, though, last year, Megan Berry, she got 122,764 votes. So Democrats are claiming it's a blowout, that they overperformed, even though they got 41,000 votes less this year than they did last year. In fact, their performance this year equaled their performance in 2018 midterms, where they got actually 600 more votes than they did this year. But they're still claiming this is a victory. They're claiming this is a message. This underwhelming performance by both sides. Let's be honest here. Republicans didn't do much to excel here either. 96,988 Republicans, according to NBC, that's where I'm getting these figures from last night's election. 96,988 Republicans turned out to vote for Matthew Van Epps, compared to 191,992 last year. They lost almost half their voters from last year. They just didn't bother voting this year. And it's not because they're dissatisfied with the performance. I mean, in Virginia, we had everyone who is a Republican in Virginia is fine enough with Trump, but just a third of them decided to sit home for the election that we had, and that led to Democrats winning, even though an eighth of Democrats, more than an eighth of Democrats, also said, "Yeah, I'm not going to vote this year either. It's not that important." And also, again, this is compared to the 2024 election, so we're not even counting registered voters. We're just counting the people who voted last year that just, not going to bother this year. Now, perhaps because the special election is a special election, no one ever turns out for those, and it was held on a month after the regular election, maybe that influenced turnout a little bit, and that's why turnout's so derpy for both sides, but it's still not something anyone should be bragging about. Like, the fact that, and then Democrats are like, "Oh, look, we overperformed here." You did the same you did in 2018. On top of that, the district has more Democrats since 2018, because in 2020, Republicans redistricting. They wanted fewer Democrats. They went to, well, Nashville, it was a Nashville, Tennessee. It's a center with of Democrats. There's a large Democrat voting block there. So Republicans in 2020, they decided to split that up. And part of the redistricting meant some of those Democrats went to District 7. So even though there are more Democrat areas now, not just a bigger Democrat voting pool because more Democrats were born or came of age to vote and moved into the area, but also the Republicans deliberately added more Democrats to this area back in 2020, and they still only got the same turnout they had in 2018. And they're claiming that's a victory. They're claiming that's a win. They're claiming that's a message. They're claiming that is a bellwether. No, actually, I think the real bellwether, though, is the Republican underperformance, with half of them staying home. And the other bellwether would be the quality of the candidate that the Democrats chose. Who is this Afton Bain, Bean, Bine, however you pronounce her last name? I don't really care because I don't care for her. Well, let's see. In 2023, there was a mass shooting in Nashville, Tennessee. A trans man decided, "I hate these transphobic Christian children who I've never actually met. I'm just going to assume they're transphobic, and I'm going to shoot them all." What did Afton Bain do? She said she would assist the trans community in the fight against transphobia after this mass shooting that was done in the name of transphobia. I mean, that's hardly surprising for Democrats, though, because, you know, they support Islam even after terrorist attacks. I mean, gee whiz, we have right now the Minnesota Star Tribune. They published a piece saying that we shouldn't stereotype the Muslim Somali community over the fraud that 40% or so have been found engaging in Minnesota, which Ann Coulter rightly pointed out in a tweet in reply to this, that leftists do hold all whites accountable for the 1.4% who own slaves. So I think it's fair to hold the Somali community accountable for 40% of them engaging in this. But no, Minnesota Star Tribune is just first to line up and say, "Nope, we support them. We got this community's back," even though they're clearly doing all this fraud. It's more than just a one-off thing. It's a widespread community activity. I mean, if 40% of whites were holding slaves today, yeah, you'd probably be right to suggest that the white community had some problems. But no, they can't call out these. And you know the media would be all over that, but nope, not this. It's an on-story. You're stereotyping, you're racist, etc. Now, that's what happened in response to a trans man being cheered on by the trans community after committing a mass murder in the name of fighting transphobia. You get this Democrat candidate for the Tennessee's 7th District coming out and saying, "I support this person and all that they stood for," or at least "I support all that they stood for, if not their actions," which led to them doing what they stood for. It led to no other logical conclusion than what they did. In fact, if anything, her response would have encouraged more mass shootings. And in fact, perhaps we could tie the murder of Charlie Kirk in a way into this as well, because after all, encouraging this rhetoric is what led to the assassin's motivation that killed Charlie Kirk, this radical leftist. Unfortunately, only 24% of people seem to know that it was a radical leftist who assassinated him, with 22% thinking it was a left-winger. Wow. That's a big propaganda victory. No wonder Democrats thought they had a handle on the special election here that happened. But on top of that, hateful mass murdering ideology that Afton Bain engaged in, this Democrat candidate for the area of District 7 of Tennessee, she actually is on video saying she hates the district, she hates Nashville, she hates the people, she hates everything about it. And furthermore, she's also on video committing insurrection, almost. She storms the governor's office, and when police lightly tap her to drag her out, she flops on the floor like they shot her and screams and wails, throws this temper tantrum, this psychotic episode. She had this entire breakdown right on camera, And then she also did something else in the state legislature where she tried to disrupt legislative business. Again, that's insurrection right there, isn't it? That's what they were saying about January 6th. But here she is committing insurrection. They're voting for her. Here she is flopping on the floor, throwing a temper tantrum like an unstable child, except she's in her 30s, and they're voting for her. This is the kind of person the Democrat Party wants. She's out there fighting ICE agents, obstructing them, harassing them. And they vote for her. This is what the Democrats wanted. They managed to get the same turnout they got in a midterm year in a special election because this is what the Democrat Party now stands for. I'm sure a third of them sat out. I guess that's a third of Democrats who are disgusted. But that just proves the point that the smaller the party gets, the more radicalized it becomes and the nuttier their candidates. So if anything, that's the bellwether for next year. Republicans are going to be underwhelming in their performance and Democrats are going to be extremist in their politics. More Alan Nathan Show after this break.
Medicare's annual enrollment period is the one time each year for people to review their coverage and ensure it still works for them. Premiums, prescriptions, and provider networks can shift from year to year. With more, here's Blake Amos, Medicare expert with HealthSpring.
Medicare enrollment is an important opportunity to make sure your plan still matches your health and budget needs. Even if you are satisfied with your current coverage, it's smart to check for updates so you are not caught off guard by unexpected costs or limited access.
The Medicare annual enrollment period runs through December 7th. It's a time for people with original Medicare to consider supplemental coverage or explore Medicare Advantage plans. It's important to research and understand these different options to find the right fit.
When comparing plans, look closely at monthly premiums, deductibles, and which prescriptions are covered. Also, check that your doctors and hospitals are in-network. Taking the time to compare options now helps avoid costly surprises later.
To learn more about Medicare annual enrollment, visit healthspring.com.
Prime Video introduces June Farms, a charming new unscripted series filled with love, drama, and farms. June Farms, which sits on 120 acres in New York's beautiful Hudson Valley, is a well-known destination for high-end weddings and events. The farm hosts eccentric locals, well-heeled travelers, and occasional celebrities who come for the unique accommodations and incredible service. But sometimes, not everything goes as planned. Demanding guests, unpredictable weather, vendor mishaps, and a property full of animals can all wreak havoc on the farm's intricately planned events. June Farms owner Matt Baumgartner.
This is a high-stress job, to say the least, especially during wedding season. But despite the chaos, my employees and I all come together, kind of like a weird, dysfunctional family, and create magical memories that last a lifetime. I think viewers will enjoy getting a look at what happens behind the curtains and how, incredibly, everything seems to fall into place.
Don't miss June Farms, now streaming on Prime Video.
About 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and more women under 50 are facing the disease than ever before. Dr. Lori J. Kirstein from the American College of Surgeons has more.
Being diagnosed with breast cancer at a young age can create unique challenges. Many young women may be busy building their careers, relationships, or families, and suddenly face tough medical decisions that can affect the rest of their lives.
Surgeons are seeing this shift firsthand, and research is underway to improve treatment options and better understand how to support women with breast cancer.
Receiving support during and after breast cancer treatment is essential. Younger patients often have a harder time finding resources that fit their needs, from fertility preservation to guidance on recovery after treatment. The American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer has resources to help address the needs of younger women and all women with breast cancer.
Learn more at facs.org/breastcare.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show by Silker Joe Show, co-host Joe hosting today. So, there's this terrorist suspect who said he went to kill Americans in Fort Worth suicide bombing. I'm just reading this headline here, that's why the grammar was so punchy. It's from Fox4News.com, FBI, terror suspect said he wanted to kill Americans in Fort Worth suicide bombing. And this is coming after yet another Afghan national who was granted asylum here, had executed a National Guardswoman and tried to kill another National Guardsman in D.C. Now, the left, of course, as I was alluding to in the last segment, they're out there saying, taking the side of the Afghan, apparently saying that the National Guard being in D.C. was a provocation, and this person had more right to be in D.C. than the National Guard did, therefore they got what they deserved, screw them. And now we have this Afghan national from Fort Worth, shortly thereafter, seem to have been plotting a suicide bomb attack. Joining us now to talk about this, we have Michael Letts. He is CEO and founder of Invest USA, a national grassroots nonprofit providing police with bulletproof vests that has aided agencies internationally. Michael has earned the Congressional Gold Medal Award for community service and has over 30 years of experience in law enforcement, is currently chaplain with several agencies as well as the state constable for the state of South Carolina. Michael Letts, always happy to be on the show. How are you today?
Doing great, Joseph. Always a privilege to be with you. We thank you for the opportunity.
Yep, always glad to have you. So what do you make of this for in such short order, too? It seems like that you've been on the show plenty of times warning about the people we've been letting in the country, and now within a week we get this mass shooting by an Afghani, and now a thwarted suicide bombing.
Well, we've actually got three. Right before the shooting in D.C., we had one. Same program in Fairfax, who declared his intent at a traffic stop, and he decided to take on law enforcement, and it didn't work out too well for him. So that's three different people that have all been in the same program of amnesty, bringing Afghans over who are assets to assist us. I think we need to take a look and understand why this is occurring. You know, when the President Trump decided to withdraw, he was going to do it orderly. We didn't need to be the world's police, but we were going to keep Bagram Air Force Base, and with a contingency of about 5,000 troops there. We had also sent word to the Taliban, which they clearly understood, mess with the hair of an American or one of our assets, and it'll be the last thing you ever see or ever do. That's why they had touched it for 18 months. But when the election went the way it did, which we all know there was question as to whether that was a true election or not, and Joe Biden came into office, he totally screwed that operation up. They panicked. They decided to withdraw immediately. They didn't know what they were doing. They pulled the troops out first, left Americans behind, gave the Taliban the list of our assets. And of course, once they did that, they realized the Taliban was going to kill them all. Wouldn't look too good on America's image. So they decided to quickly create an amnesty program, bring those Afghans who were assets to the United States. They brought 168,000 of them. You know, imagine that number. And here's the issue. They didn't know who they were bringing. They didn't know whether you had been an asset or not. They just decided, because of a time aspect, if you raise your hand and said, "I helped the Americans," jump on the plane. That's what they did. They didn't vet any of them. They turned it over to the CIA to vet them once they got here. They never vetted them when they got here. So we had the CIA not doing its job. The CIA hopefully would have never let any of these people in. There was no need to bring them in had we done it the right way and kept them safe in their own country. But that being said, they came here, they got involved with their people that they're most familiar with. That's the mosque and all that they're located with. We know for a fact that many of the mosques here are radicalizing Islamic jihadists that come into their congregations, among other things. And so what do you expect to get? You're seeing it now. You know, in the last 48 hours, quite a few Imams from around the world have now called on the terrorist cells, the sleeper cells. You remember before, Joseph, I had told you there was roughly 110 sleeper cells across the country. I'm very disappointed to be able to tell you now that there are over 1,000 in this country. They're trying to tell those sleeper cells to activate to carry out terrorist attacks on American soil. So I believe we are just seeing the tip of the iceberg, quite frankly, right now. That is where we're at in this situation, and it's going to get a lot worse. But the president's taking action. What's he doing? He's making sure that, first of all, we stop any more additional personnel from coming into this country. Second of all, we're going to go back into all those who are here. They need to be vetted. And a number of things. If they came here on a temporary basis And with a visa, that visa's expired, whether they're Somali, whether they're Afghanistan, whether they're Haitian, makes no difference. They need to go. We're going to start getting rid of these people. And then the third thing, of course, that we're going to be cracking down on is if you're still here because of one of these programs, but we have you on file, which we have, this is already being evident, Dearborn, Michigan, and others, where they came out in the streets dancing, celebrating the shooting of the National Guard people, then your values are have no place in America, and we're going to revoke their visas and kick them out as well. That's the first step we need to take, and we need to do it immediately and forcefully.
Mm. And unfortunately, there's just so much opposition to basic national security by folks in the Democrat Party and on the left. It's like, do they think that these people are their base just because so many Muslims turned out to vote for Mamdani? Do they think that they will not be the ones to be turned upon? I mean, gee whiz, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, the House Minority Leader who came out in favor of Mamdani, he got politically turned on already by one of Mamdani's allies who is now challenging him.
Exactly. And, you know, unfortunately, their liberal bases, their liberal ideology is so skewed their minds from common sense, they can't see it. But the rest of us can. And why place the rest of America at risk? It's time we do what caused Trump to get elected to begin with. Put America and Americans first, our safety and security, and that's the way it should be. That's the way every other country in the world operates. It's about time we start doing the same thing, Joseph.
Hmm. Yeah, but we're being told that it's racist or bigoted to do that. I mean, we had, Senator Mark Kelly came out on NBC on Sunday and came out saying how pretty much if you do any kind of vetting, it's just going to prevent these people from coming into the country, prevent any, he referred to them as brown people coming into the country. And it's like, really? Do you think any kind of vetting is going to prevent them? Then why would we want them here to begin with if they can't pass basic vetting?
You're exactly right, Joseph. And, you know, I say to the leftist liberals, look, if it makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside to call me a nasty name, go for it. It's still not going to do anything. It's not going to cause us to change our opinion to wanting to protect Americans first. It's time we stand up for this country and for each other and put it to call the proper cause where it needs to be, and that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, though, we have just so many, as you said, there's over 1,000 cells in this country already. And it seems like we've just had this big problem. Now you have all these mayors coming out saying they're going to fight ICE agents. They're going to stop them in the streets. You have all, I mean, in Tennessee, they had that special election yesterday where one of the candidates, the Democrat candidate, actually had been out there trying to stop ICE from arresting criminals and people who broke our borders. So like, it seems they're just aiding and abetting terrorism at this point.
They are. Thank God she lost. But I will tell you this, it is time. And this is what I'm encouraging the administration. I've said it before on your show, Joseph. National security, our four founding fathers gave one issue that we could use if we ever got to the point in this country we were so corrupt, things were falling apart. We're at that point now. It's time for military tribunals. It's time to protect national security. These judges, these activists, these members of Congress who have sold out our country need to be brought before a military tribunal and tried. When that starts happening, accountability will be restored and people start getting their sense back again.
Mm-hmm. It seems that they might be onto it because of those six congressmen and senators who came out saying that the military should disobey whatever they think illegal orders might be. But Michael, let's appreciate you being on the show. And again, listeners, he is CEO and founder of Invest USA. Where can our listeners find more information about that?
STUSA.org. It's a charity.org. They can support our first responders. God bless. God bless America, and have a Merry Christmas.
All right, thank you. Merry Christmas to you as well, and God bless you and America and listeners. We got more Al Nathan Show after this break.
Breast cancer is a disease that is diagnosed in over 300,000 people in the United States each year. Of those, about 30% diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer will go on to develop metastatic breast cancer, which means the cancer has spread to other parts of the body. Here's oncologist Dr. Edith Perez, Professor Emeritus at Mayo Clinic, with more.
If you've been diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, you may have heard of HER2. HER2 is a type of biomarker, and biomarkers can help doctors get a better sense of how your cancer might behave and which treatments may be an option. For a long time, HER2 expression was seen as an on and off switch. Your tumor was either HER2 positive or HER2 negative, and that was it. We now know that HER2 is more like a dimmer and can include lower levels of HER2.
No matter where you fall on the HER2 spectrum, understanding your tumor's HER2 status can help you and your doctor shape personalized treatment aimed at better managing your disease. Visit HER2statusmatters.com to learn why asking your doctor about biomarker testing and HER2 status is important if you have metastatic breast cancer.
The holidays are a time for celebration, and for many that means indulging in delicious foods that are often high in fat and cholesterol. But for people living with uncontrolled high LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, too much of these foods can further increase LDL-C and increase risk for heart attack or stroke. Besides diet and exercise, many people take statins to maintain healthy LDL-C levels, but even that may not be enough for some. Registered dietitian Leanne Bloden is VP and Head of Clinical Development at Esperion.
Statins are the standard of care in cholesterol management, but may not be enough or may not be tolerable for patients who have what is called statin intolerance. Alternative medications are available to help people who cannot take statins at all or at recommended levels. Patients dealing with statin intolerance can ask their healthcare provider about alternative medications to help manage their high bad cholesterol and reduce the risk of a heart attack or stroke, not only during the holidays, but all year long.
Visit statinalternatives.info to learn more.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show. By Silker Joe Show co-host Joe hosting for you all today. So let's get to the second topic that I mentioned in the opening segment. Democrats create hoax around War Secretary Hegseth to justify calls for military coup against Trump administration in the name of democracy, of course. So what happened was, and this is a Breitbart article here, headline, New York Times debunks Washington Post's pathetic kill everybody hoax. And what it's basically saying is that the Washington Post had said that the War Secretary, Peter Hegseth, he came out, or is it just Pete Hegseth? I think there's an R sometimes, but its nickname is Pete. Anyway, I don't know. Secretary Hegseth allegedly said, kill them all, or something to that effect, when talking about these narco-terrorists after some survivors of an initial strike. And this came out, and, you know, Democrats are saying that'd be a war crime, blah, blah, blah. And the Washington Post says anonymous sources told them that he said such a thing. Of course, it's the same anonymous sources who said that Trump said that people who died in war were suckers and losers. But, no one verifies that he's actually said that. There's no audio recording, nothing. All you have is your anonymous source who is, I don't know, about as reliable as a 50-year-old car that has been shot a couple of times. So good luck with that. But Washington Post found their source to be also so reliable because it told them exactly what they wanted. But then the New York Times comes out and says, well, no, actually turns out this didn't actually happen. Wait a minute. This didn't happen? Oh, dear. This hoax that came out, though, just a couple of days after the release of that video of those six congressmen and senators who were saying, I'm from the intelligence community, I'm from the military, and we say you should disobey Trump's orders if we say that they're illegal. A couple of days later, the Washington Post says, oh, look, Trump's war secretary is giving illegal orders to support this claim. But then it turns out it didn't actually happen. There goes the support, but it did its initial thing, and that's what a lot of this is about. Whether it's Democrats passing laws that they know will not survive a challenge to the Supreme Court, whether it's the Democrat media telling blatant lies just to get through the news cycle, they do it because they know that the first impressions are lasting impressions. If they make you think that these guys who came out and said that the military should disobey Trump because of illegal orders are justified because the Secretary of War is issuing illegal orders, you're not going to really hear later on when they say, oh, it turns out that was all a hoax, that the illegal orders didn't happen, because you will still be thinking illegal orders. And even if you do hear it, you might think, well, he could do it. It's something that he might do, which has been justification Democrats use a lot for believing things that weren't actually true about Trump. They hear something, it turns out to be a hoax, and they say, well, I say that he actually thinks that way. Even if he didn't do it, it's something he would. Or even if he didn't say that, it's something he would say. Therefore, it's still true somehow. And this fake reporting like the Washington Post just allows them to make those mental gymnastics, makes it a little easier for them. And since this time, though, even those congressmen and senators have engaged multiple times. What do they think an illegal order that Trump has issued has been? They weren't able to come up with anything, but they're still demanding insurrection against him just in case. He hasn't done it yet, but boy, he might. And I mean, we have on MS Now, it's not MSNBC anymore, it's MS Now's Morning Joe, Senator Mark Warner came out and said, quote, uniformed military may help save us from Trump. Well, the Trump part wasn't in the quote. It was uniformed military may help save us from, and then Breitbart filled in President Trump as being the person who he's talking about, Senator Mark Warren, Warner. Now, Senator Mark Warner, he used to be kind of a moderate voice, but he's just gone absolute bananas. But then again, his home state is Virginia, where they just elected an attorney general who thinks that it is okay, just, and morally correct to murder people if those murders will lead to your policy being implemented. Yep, there is not a problem that needs your policy, so it's moral, ethical to create the problem by killing people in order to justify that policy that you want to happen. That's about where the Democrat Party is. If you don't think that we have the right solutions, we're going to destroy the country until we're the only solution. And we see the absolute nuttery. I was talking in the opening segment about how crazy they are. And talking in the last segment about how crazy they are. They're supporting terrorism now, for crying out loud, because ICE must be worse than the terrorists that are in the country because I don't know, we hate Trump, and Trump is wrong on everything, even when it comes to terrorism. And again, that kind of thinking, that kind of rationale, is why the Washington Post was able to get away with telling such a blatant lie. And the only thing surprising and impressive about this isn't how widely believed the lie was. It wasn't how much distribution it got. The only thing unbelievable is that the New York Times, of all people, were the ones who came out and said, oh, it's actually just a hoax. It didn't actually happen. So they just needed a quick boost here, and maybe they were hoping that it would help with that special election that happened yesterday. But as I went over with, because we saw that in the lead up to the November elections, Democrats were just shutting down the government. They held the government hostage until after the election because that was rallying their base. They had their No Kings protest. They were rallying their people. They were coming out in numbers. And then when the election finally happens, it's actually supremely underwhelming. They try and spin it as a victory. Like, they're trying to spin the special election in Tennessee as a victory. Oh, we took back Virginia from the Republicans. Well, no, you didn't. Trump never won the state. Trump hadn't won an election in the state ever. Not in 2016, not in 2020, not in 2024. He didn't win. In fact, for this past election, 17% of Democrats sat at home. They figured, eh, what the hell? I'm not enthused. I don't really give a crap anymore. So I'm not going to bother voting. That's not enthusiasm. And 17% of Democrats compared to who voted last year, at that caveat there. But they're saying that's a victory. New York State, or New York City, like 800,000 people didn't bother coming out to vote. And yet Mamdani is considered a victory for the left, even though he was running against Andrew Cuomo, yet he's still considered a part of the Democrat victory, part of the Democrat sweep. And now, continuing to gaslight themselves into thinking that they are a mainstream party, they're saying that losing an election, a special election in Tennessee, is equivalent to sending a blow against the Republican Party nationwide, just because half the Republican voters didn't bother showing up compared to previous years because, well, it's a special election. It's in December. I got better things to do with my time. This is not important to me, apparently. So, like I said at the end of the last of the opening segment, it's underwhelming Republicans and radicalized Democrats. Just so absolutely nuts that they create these fantasies and then use those fantasies to justify their decisions. Like this fantasy that Trump issued illegal orders and that the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, told the military to kill everybody after seeing survivors from a narco boat strike. And what actually happened with that is that it's just this quote from New York Times here. But each official said Mr. Hegseth's directive did not specifically address what should happen if a first missile turned out not to fully accomplish all of those things. And the official said his order was not a response to surveillance footage showing that at least two people in the boat survived the fire blast. But that's what the Washington Post was saying. The Washington Post was saying that Pete Hegseth was shown this footage, saw the survivors, and said, kill them. Kill everybody. But that didn't happen. He was just asked by Admiral Bradley, who I guess was overall in command of the operation, hey, we need a second strike. Okay, sure, I'll authorize it. Boom, that's it. But then the Washington Post says, no, this guy is bloodthirsty. He saw the survivors. It's war crimes, war criminal, blah, blah, blah. And this is why the military should disobey these illegal orders, which it turned out to be nothing. It turned out nothing illegal here actually happened. But they had to have the fantasy in order to justify Mark Warner coming out and saying the military needs to have a coup against Trump, in order to justify those six congressmen and senators. The Washington Post probably knew going in, right after that video came out, they're like, illegal orders, the hell are they talking about? There were no illegal orders. We would have been all over them if the military had been issued illegal orders. We've been saying for over a year now that Trump is going to issue illegal orders if he gets back into office. You know we would have been reporting on them if they had happened. We got to do something. Where are those anonymous sources at that we can count on? Well, they got their anonymous sources. Now they have their illegal order, which the New York Times later has to debunk because somehow they still have journalistic integrity. I'm surprised. Congratulations to the New York Times. I think this is one of the backhanded compliment that I'm giving them right here, I guess, but still. Anyway, they have to have this hoax because they have nothing else. Trump isn't doing what they expected him to do. He is not being the same insane, tyrannical leader. They don't have anything. They're out of power. They won elections in friendly waters. They lost elections in unfriendly waters. That's it. And so they have nothing left right now. They are scrambling. They are desperate. People are leaving the party. Donors are leaving the party. they need something to try and get people to rally behind. So these six congressmen come out and say, hey, don't obey illegal orders. Well, they need some fuel for the fire, because as we've talked about, they couldn't name any illegal orders when asked. None of them could. None of them can. They have no idea what an illegal order is that Trump might have issued. So the Washington Post had to come up with something to give them some firepower. But they came up with a hoax. They came up with a dud. Damaged the cause more than helped. But that is, of course, assuming word gets around. Because as I mentioned before, all anyone's going to get is that first impression that this happened. They're not going to see the retraction. In fact, I'm not even sure the Washington Post will even bother issuing a retraction. After all, it was their anonymous source. They can just say, well, it was the anonymous source. We just reported what the source said, whoever those anonymous sources are. More Al and Nathan Show coming up after this break.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a common, contagious, and potentially serious virus that can affect the lungs and breathing passages. GSK's Sideline RSV campaign is highlighting the risks for older adults, especially those with certain chronic conditions. With more, here's Dr. Leonard Friedland from GSK.
Each year, about 177,000 adults 65 and older are hospitalized in the U.S. with RSV. Adults aged 50 to 74 with chronic lung or heart disease, complicated diabetes, or weakened immune systems, and all adults 75 and older are at increased risk for severe illness.
Vaccination is available to help prevent severe RSV.
It's essential to understand your risks. Older adults should talk to their doctor or pharmacist about RSV and ask if vaccination is right for them. Taking proactive steps now can help prevent severe illness later.
For more information and resources, visit SidelineRSV.com.
This holiday season, as families gather to celebrate, the Army Reserve is proud to reaffirm our commitment to those who serve and those who support them. Command Sergeant Major Gregory Betty shares more.
The Army Reserve supports our nation and invests in the future of our warrior citizens each and every day. Our soldiers remain combat ready to respond to today's ever-changing challenges with world-class training and career opportunities. The Army Reserve remained focused on building a stronger, more connected community. From the U.S. Army Reserve, happy holidays to all soldiers, families, civilians, and the communities that support us. Wherever you are this season, thank you for your service and dedication. Wishing you a joyful, safe, and peaceful holiday. Twice a citizen, combat ready, this will defend.
Visit usar.army.mil to learn more about the Army Reserve.
Flu season typically occurs in October through May. Last season was among the most severe in recent history, resulting in an unprecedented number of pediatric deaths. Dr. Candace Robinson, Director of Scientific Affairs and Public Health for U.S. Vaccines at GSK, shares more.
The flu can lead to serious illness, hospitalization, and even death, especially in young children, older adults, pregnant women, and those with certain chronic health conditions.
Megan Parks, a mother from Houston, Families Fighting Flu advocate and GSK spokesperson, shares how the flu impacted her family.
My daughter, Kennedy, was a healthy two-year-old who died suddenly from the flu. Flu can be deadly, and annual flu vaccination can help prevent serious complications.
Help protect yourself and your loved ones by prioritizing flu vaccination for everyone 6 months and older in your family. Speak with your doctor or pharmacist about flu vaccination today.
Visit cdc.gov/flu for more information.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking, but no, my friend. I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show by Silker Joe Show. Co-host Joe here. Thanks for sticking with us through this hour of the show. And we are waiting for a guest for this segment, but I'm just going to get into this topic because, with or without a guest, it is something that the late, great Al Nathan was rather stickler for. Well, I don't think that's the proper term. It was a sticking point for him, and that is the filibuster. Long-time fans of the show would know that Alan was rather against it, because he knew that the Democrats would eventually nuke it, therefore Republicans should be the first to get rid of it, because you don't want to be the last to get rid of it in this case. But the do-nothing Republicans, of course, in the Senate, they want an excuse to do nothing. So they say, oh, we're going to abide by the Senate norms, we can't afford to get rid of it. But we have heard from Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, back when he was Senate Majority Leader, yes, if they had the votes, they would have gotten rid of the filibuster. Heck yeah. And if they had won in 2024, it would have been gone. But it wasn't. They couldn't get it back. So they could not get the Democrat votes necessary to get rid of it back in when Schumer was the Senate Majority Leader. He was hoping the 2024 election would rectify that. Instead, that handed the Senate back to Republicans. So where did that leave anyone else, right? Where does that leave the filibuster now? You know that Schumer wanted to get rid of it, but he didn't. He couldn't. But if he had been, he would have. Republicans in the Senate right now know this, and they are in a position to get rid of it. So why won't they? This is part of why Republican enthusiasm has been underwhelming this year, whether in Virginia or Tennessee or wherever. It's been because, well, what are these people doing when we vote them into office? They're not getting much of anything done. And look at the Congress. You know, overall, the House of Representatives, the Senate, fewer bills have been going through than normal. It's a below-average performance. And then they allowed a month-long government shutdown to happen just because they felt like it. They could have easily ended it. The Republicans could have. Democrats even pointed out how Republicans could have nuked the filibuster, ended the shutdown, no problem. So, but the Republicans just refused. It's almost like they don't want to get anything done. And that's been an attitude that we've seen in Republicans for years now. I've talked about it plenty before on this show. It's been a sticking point for me, a bit of a thorn in my side about them. How, you know, and when they've previously had the majorities, they just seem to want to just sit on their thumbs and get nothing done. All bluster, no action. And the filibuster is one of the excuses that they seem to be using for it. And as if the Senate norms will remain the Senate norms when the Democrats, who are increasingly becoming radical, as we've been discussing throughout this hour, the program, I mean, just look at that candidate they were running in Tennessee yesterday. Do you think those people are going to stick to the Democratic norms and protect the filibuster? No, even Schumer said he was going to get rid of it, so why would someone more radical than him keep it? Well, joining us now to talk about this, because she has an op-ed out in the Hill about this, we have Heather Higgins. She is CEO of Independent Women's Voice and the president of Suasion Insights. Heather Higgins, happy having the show. How are you today?
I'm well, Alan. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, glad to have you. So you have this op-ed out. I've been kind of introducing it here a little bit. It's titled, "The Filibuster Must Fall to Save the Republicans Over at the Hill." And that's definitely something that we would agree with. What's your take on this?
I used to be one to be a happy institutionalist singing the virtues and praises of the filibuster. Then I became disenchanted with the way in which for the last 20 or 30 years, they've really been abusing the first motion to proceed to consider, which is what allows legislation onto the floor. It had become essentially a racket about, you know, incumbency protection and saving them from having to have debates about and discussion on issues that might be challenging for re-elections. And historically, that's not the way the filibuster had been used. It had been used at the end, but it hadn't been used to prevent debate and discussion because everybody understood that that was the purpose of the Senate. That, you know what, the great teacup and saucer metaphor of cooling debate and rational airing of differences. But over time, it's been clear that the Senate has become basically the graveyard where what passes in the House goes to die. And both parties have used that to their advantage. But what we've seen is, I guess the best analogy for me is if you're going into a boxing match and you're hearing credible statements out of your opponent that they're planning on not just having gloves, but they're bringing a knife. And every indication is that this is not just rhetoric or talk. This is something that's actually being planned. You are nuts to go into that boxing ring with just gloves and assuming that things are going to be the same. And at this point, based on what Schumer has said, I think we have every reason to believe that as soon as they have a majority, they are going to get rid of the filibuster and proceed with their wish list and proceed with the things that they think can, because the Democrats tend to be very good about what are the institutional processes that we can change that even if we eventually get out of power, those that are hard to undo. And so that's why there's been discussion about things like D.C. statehood, which gives them two additional benefits, or putting additional justices on the Supreme Court to tip the balance of court decisions. So that's why I wrote this op-ed, which is, you know, there are things that I think have broad public support that are not what I would call partisan wish list items, but are just about having a healthy country where people trust it again and trust in institutions again. And a lot of it goes to things that actually are kind of politically unpopular among certain influential cohorts in Washington, like having transparency in healthcare pricing or eliminating things that really are wasteful. But if you're going to have the end of the filibuster, it should not be for something as transitory and trivial as a few more months of funding on a continuing resolution. It should be for the large systemic structural changes that we desperately need that have not been able to get done. And that's a long-winded answer. I'm sorry for going on so long.
No, that's fine. I do like long-winded answers. It means I don't have to talk and I can rest my voice after 2 hours of doing the show. But do you see any legislation coming up from the House? Because this Congress so far has been underperforming the averages as far as how much legislation they've put out. So do you see anything down the road that would warrant this filibuster ender? Or are they like avoiding anything that actually would justify that just so they can keep not ending it and not be the ones to say, I didn't end the filibuster?
One certainly gets the impression that, you know, Republicans tend to be very conservative and cautious. They don't like to create institutional change. It's going to take a lot of political pressure from their constituents, probably rallied by Trump's demands, that will lead us to that. But I don't see it happening without that otherwise.
All right. Well, Heather Higgins, CEO of Independent Women's Voice, appreciate you being on the show. And listeners, you can find her column over at The Hill, The Filibuster Must Fall to Save the Republic. Unfortunately, we are out of time for this hour of the program, but our websites are MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and AlNathan.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.